take a seat for our last session. I know probably everyone's tired and full of all the ideas we've heard today, but hopefully if we can just come together quickly, get something down that we can take to our meetings tomorrow. For those of you who haven't been to one of these events before, it's a bit of an active tradition to bring together the participants in a summit. It's the last session of the day to try and tease out some of the key points that have been made during the day, some of our key learnings, and we follow that up tomorrow with a series of meetings with politicians and senior bureaucrats. And those messages are what we base our discussions on when we go and see those people tomorrow. So we'd really welcome your input into what you've taken from today and what you would like us to then take forward in those meetings tomorrow. And to kick us off, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Fiona Peter-Wheatland to agree to give us her personal reflections. She's not representing any organisation, but just as a consumer advocate, as someone that has been involved in the health system in a number of different capacities over the years and has some valuable insights and experience, and has very generously agreed to share those with us now. Thank you, Fiona.
A sinking feeling. I thought I was supposed to be summing up what we talked about today, so I'm going to do that anyway. I'd like to first of all acknowledge the country upon which we're meeting, of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and I'm really glad they let us have this here. I think that two takeaway short messages that I've got was what Ian McCauley described as the unbearable weirdness of healthcare. That's certainly been my experience, and I think is actually a really useful, simple explanation of what it's like to be a consumer accessing healthcare. And I think the other one was Justin Mohammed's view about it's our piece of time to make things better. And it seemed to me that it's a really useful thing to remember. Other key messages, and I really strongly support these, so I've only picked out, it's a self-selected, my favourite bits, okay? Universality as a core principle. I have a particular passion about this because my daughter has just returned after 4 years in the US, where she ended up what she was working, and she had a quarter equina syndrome over there. So she was in a wheelchair for some time, and she's out of the wheelchair now. But working in a system where there isn't universal health care, when you've got an ongoing health care needs in that way, it was pretty devastating. And she left her husband over in America for a while to come back to Australia because she said it was just impossibly stressful trying to actually get access and do it in a system that didn't have universal ideas as a core principle. So I am now absolutely, I was already committed to it, but I'm even more committed to it now. I think the other thing that came across to me today was everyone stressed the importance of values underpinning any healthcare reform, so that we have to get those right. And we need that to create a shared vision to communicate to sides. And we've had several different wonderful visions put to us today. At a very grassroots sort of level, I looked after my mum while she was dying. That's part of the reason my PhD took so long. And I can remember she was in an aged care facility, and she was up in Sydney and I was based in Canberra. But every time she got really sick, they let me stay up there with her. And she had pulmonary fibrosis, and she had a pretty rough last 12 months. But I lived in a nursing home. It's not necessarily an experience I want to repeat, but I did actually live in a nursing home for around about 4 months of her last 12 months of being alive, and it was always at the times when she needed someone there to just talk to at night time, sometimes someone to just be there with her. And each time I went, it was always after she had a fall, she would whip off her things because she'd forget she had to have the oxygen on, and she'd decide she was going to go for a wander, and then she'd fall down, and she would end up in the acute sector. And every time it happened, she was never hurt in them except bruising, but the interaction with all those systems, it was a very big eye-opener about what healthcare shouldn't look like a lot of the time. But at the same time, being there and being able to be with her was something about what it could look like as well. So I think that those lived experience stories of people about what doesn't work and what does work at the moment are important in us shaping what our vision could look like. I think Sharon's discussion about the drivers of inequities, I thought also gave an illustration of what was so important. Imagining that if you're looking at healthcare or health, I mean, what patients want, what consumers want is health. They don't really want healthcare. So if you have your system that is designed to look at what will deliver health, then you can't help but go into the socioeconomic determinants of health side of it. And you need to have economic policy that's used to improve the lot of all conditions that support everyone to flourish. I mean, maybe we need a department of flourishment or something. I think that might work. I'm not sure who'd be the minister of flourishing though. But it's an idea. And I think that if we start thinking about it in that more holistic fashion, then I think we've got a real chance of actually understanding why and how we can sell a vision to people. I've recently read Viking Economics, which described how the Scandinavians, I always figured that the Scandinavians had just some fantastic gene that made the high taxing acceptable to them. But when you read the book about the history of the change from essentially a feudal system in the end of the 1800s to where they are now, it involved non-violent direct action by communities of coalition across their society. And I looked at that now, I thought, way to go. That's what we need. We need communities of coalitions across these areas so that we end up with things that governments can't ignore, and which in fact in the end become what government is. I talked earlier today about the waiting 30 years to see a notebook scheme possibly be able to get up in the ACT. And what that made me reflect back was that what we're doing now, we need to actually have done the research and thought through the vision so that we can actually be ready when the time is right, because I think these things are about the coalitions of time, the bringing together of all of those things at the right time, but we can shake some of that as well. So we need to get our ducks in line to do this thing, and it requires some big ideas, more than one probably big idea, to capture the imagination of the Australian community. I believe really strongly that people want good ethical solutions that will meet their needs when they really need it, and that they're happy to have systems in place like that. And I think it's up to us to actually capture their good selves and their imagination, and to help them have a society that can be the best it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona. That was fantastic. It's really helped to bring all the diverse discussions around today together around health reform, and really helped us bring together what some of the key learnings and underpinnings of all those very diverse and detailed presentations today. Now, in this session, I'd just like to ask people, it's probably an impossible task, but given that we are seeing a whole raft of politicians and senior bureaucrats in the departments of PM&C and Finance and Treasury tomorrow. And we know that politicians particularly have quite short sort of attention spans during a sitting week and can't take in too many new ideas. If we could just get from you sort of three key points from today that we could take tomorrow, that would be fantastic. So obviously we can't address everything that we've talked about today, but if we could come up with, say, three, you know, overarching key issues that we would like them to focus on, and perhaps, you know, maybe a little bit of detail under those three, but if we could go in with three major points, that would really help us. And I think having been, you know, done lots of lobbying and met with politicians, I think if you go in there with a short number of key points, then, you know, you're much more likely to engage them, they're much more likely to remember it. So does anyone have an idea of what, you know, perhaps our first point should be going in tomorrow? If you imagine that, you know, we're seeing a politician who hasn't been sitting around all day, whose head is not in health reform, who's been thinking about, you know, 17 other issues, who's just had, you know, five other groups, you know, trot in and out of their office, what is the first thing we should say to them to really get their attention and think, yes, this is something they've got to focus on? Tim.
Coalition senators differently. So the targets to the coalition senators, I think, being realistic and expecting it to have any impact at all, need to be somewhat different. Does that sound like a reasonable subdivision?
Scott, yes. Yes. So would you have an idea for either one of them? Or you're just making the general point, but you think we need six key points?
I think that
we,
I think that to the coalition senators, the first point we could make is to quote their ex-leader and say that the health system is a dog's breakfast, and the changes that have so far been suggested by Mr. Hunt are very understandable and reasonable, but they're not addressing the dog's breakfast side of the health system. And we would like to hear if they have any suggestions about the dog's breakfast. No, we shouldn't be saying that. We've got to have the suggestions.
Does anyone have anything to add to that? So basically that we need, the health system has got some major problems, needs reform, and the current government initiatives are not going to address those problems.
Taking it further, is there somebody down
there? Oh, right. As I got a microphone, I was just going to expand on what you're saying. The Robert Woods Johnson Foundation produced a fabulous document about talking about social determinants of health. And there's a section there about framing it for its Americans, so Democrat and Republican. But so perhaps the left progressive side of politics was familiar with the language around rights and around social context. And perhaps for the right side of politics, framing that as around giving people opportunities in their life and the ability to take control of their life, and that those different framings may allow us to go for the goals and outcomes that we want while engaging people from different sides of politics.
Conservative friends, it might be good to focus on the economic costs of an inefficient health system, if you like, both in terms of transactional costs, lost productivity, you know, lack of a healthy, all the stuff that they like to talk about. So if you're talking their language, then what we've got is not very very economically efficient. Doesn't help the bottom line.
Jennifer, I just add a few for the coalition slide. They're very concerned about Bupa, obviously, and PHI at the moment. So the two committees, the out-of-pocket committee and the new models of care, which just met last week. Can we suggest or have some solutions around sort of the growing medical workforce, younger workforce who are perhaps a bit more flexible, and to make sure they include on their agendas? Because the out-of-pocket committee has 8 medical college professionals and 2 non-medical people on it. So I think we need to reiterate that they need to be looking at innovation and talking to different people that are not necessarily on that committee. You see Hunt, aren't you, in the morning? Yeah, so. But he is particularly concerned, I think, about Bupa's recent moves. And of course, there's a war heating up between Bupa and AMA. And on the Labor side, can I just quickly say, do we support the Independent Commission? Several people have talked about it today. AHHA have talked about it. Is that something that everyone generally supports in Labor?
Armin, next to Annette.
I'll go well with Armin. I think that was a great point about splitting up the message between the coalition and Labor. And I think what's really clear from listening to Greg Hunt talk about the compact is he's not going to redesign like what Ian had proposed, but you know, Labor looks much more open to that kind of innovation. And I just also agree dealing with the economic imperatives that both of them have described, that is really the burning platform for them and the imperative or the catalyst for change.
This won't be a key point, you know, in talking to people, but in particular, if you're speaking to any of the crossbenchers and any of the crossbenchers in the Senate, I feel like we have a responsibility to address some of the things around drug testing, corporate tax cuts, welfare reform type issues. Given all we've talked about today about poverty and social determinants of health, those kinds of policies and bills that they're currently debating and that might not get passed if we can convince the crossbenchers not to vote for them, are worth mentioning if we're talking about good health for all people. Probably as a side note to the other things, but if we're saying we can come.
I think my point could go on either side or both. We have some politicians around at the moment who are looking for legacies. I think the minister is one of them. I think we need to emphasise that health reform is a journey. We've been on this journey as an organisation for 15 years. Our vision hasn't changed all that much from when we started, and thanks to John for pointing out that history. And we can reiterate that, and we can try and constrict people towards looking at steps we can make along the journey to fulfil a 30-year vision that Justin and Mohammed talked to us about. And I think the steps that the Coalition might make are different from the steps that Labor might make. I do support a new commission, but with different terms of reference to the last one, that will address more specific issues.
Just a couple of points of strategy. First on economics. I'd suggest that neither Labor nor Liberal have economics at the front of their mind. They have finance at the front of their mind. What does this look like in terms of budgetary costs? And I think the challenge for the Alliance is to get economics on the agenda for both sides. By the difference, I mean finance is simply saying how much can we save the budget, how much can we push the costs on to the community, whereas good economics is about being concerned not just with the budget, but with all of the community's costs. That's a basic echo one. It's not a left or right view. The second point is that whoever you're talking to, I think you really must break this model that the only way to fund private hospitals is through private health insurance. In other words, it's just so easy to say you're a bunch of lefties who want to wreck the private system. No, the private hospital system is a valuable part of our system, but if you want funding reform, it's got to break that nexus. And I suppose the third minor point, just having our fingers having been burnt so badly by the Rudd government with their deal, is that the Rudd's commission and its productivity commission inquiry must not have carve-outs for special interest groups, because that was the whole trouble with the Rudd Hospital and Health Reform Commission. It carved out the private health insurers in a very dirty deal.
Jennifer, I think the way it's written, it doesn't really divide down between Coalition and Labor. The first point, health system needs reform. The Coalition clearly, I mean, we are hoping that Labor will live up to its promise of not being scared of structural reforms. The Coalition is not into structural reforms. I remember when Tony Abbott came to address ACRA, he said, please don't use the word reform. We've got a wonderful health system, just needs some tinkering at the margins. And when Hunt was talking about his pillars today, the only thing which he didn't spell out was that he accepted the fact that something had to be done to improve the prevention side of things. Otherwise, they're interested in making the current system more efficient. And I think that they need to understand that no amount of funding or efficiency within a very inefficient dog's breakfast of a system is going to do the work. It's probably less of a struggle to get the Greens and Labor to accept that. But the other thing is giving people choice, help reducing efficiency, save dollars, broadening it. They're all points you could make with both. but that trying to get the coalition to accept that some major structural reforms are needed. Now, they will not, at the moment, accept the concept of a healthcare reform commission. Maybe if we still start talking about it and get some traction as a good idea, maybe they'll change their mind. But to me, that's the big difference. And of course, in the model I was talking about, pick up on Ian's point, you'd have regional authorities would be offering contracts to private hospitals as well as public hospitals, so that there's no need for private hospitals to be totally dependent on people having private health insurance to have an income. So I think that approaching the coalition, you would take a different tack, but it would be along those lines.
Okay, great. So just to summarise, if I could say, with the coalition, our perhaps first battle would be to get them to see that we do need some fundamental structural reform, and the have compact out the wazoo, but it's not going to actually address the key issues. And with Labor and the Greens, it is to talk about, accept the fact that we might need reform, but then talk about the detail of how that can occur. So if we do have an independent health commission or a PC inquiry, that we don't allow allow some sectors to opt out, allow private health insurance not to be part of that, for example.
I was just thinking that a really important thing that remains still unfinished business from when we did the professional indemnity review 23 years ago is the outcome measurement across the healthcare system in terms of patient outcome. So we've got limited stuff starting to come through in a number of areas, but it's a long time to be waiting to find out how we're going. And I think that that would give us better guidance for some of the things that should not be being done as well, and better ways of doing things, presumably, if we actually measure the things properly. Yeah,
great evidence.
Thank you.
So, with the coalition, one could use the Scott Morrison's productivity review, which pointed to health as something to do with productivity, so finally, it's reached. And this morning's talk from Greg Hunt really indicated that he's picking a few tiny winners in his addressing health issues and changes that he was envisaging that might happen as a result of what he suggested were going to be minimal in terms of overall population productivity, so that we could argue it that way. If you want productivity increases as the productivity review suggested, you do have to do a little bit more than make compacts to save money. You need to improve the health across the board.
Okay. Well, if no one else has got any issues, that's certainly enough. Yes, John. Yes?
We approached GPs asking them were they interested in forming a integrated medical home type thing. And it's obvious that for many GPs, it's a terrifying thought to move away from the model. And the bottom-up modelling of reform is crucial. You're not forcing things. In New Zealand, over 10 years, they kept the two systems, the fee-for-service and the contracted services, running side by side, and doctors voted with their feet, and now I think 85% of GPs are on contracts and salaries, etc. But the immediate kickback, particularly, unfortunately, in my experience, from older GPs, but that's probably perfectly understandable, if they thought they were going to be forced to change, and it's got to be a coalition of the willing, and that reduces the political pressure of thinking, oh my God, we're going to have all these people furious that you're forcing me to change.
Sure, no, that's a really, really good point. Okay, thank you very much for there's more.
Still here.
Oh, Tim.
That's okay. There's two people, there's two groups we're seeing tomorrow from public service,
yes,
and Treasury,
and
health.
Yes.
And I think Treasury people, we've got with both people, we've got the efficiency paper. I can give them a copy of that. I've got one.
Yes.
And talk to that, because obviously that's
where Treasury might be interested. It's a reiteration of what they've heard from Stephen Duckett and Hal Sterenson, more or less, but we can put it on the table and say ACCRA supports these kinds of things too. They've heard it all in much better detail and we can do some of those things.
Fantastic, no, that's a really good point. All right, thank you very much, everyone. It's been a really long day, but hopefully filled with a lot of really interesting ideas and discussion. It's given me lots to think about, and I've really welcomed everyone's input. And I'd like to especially thank all our presenters and the ACCRA executives, particularly Tim Woodruff, Deputy Chair, Ray and Bruce. Ray has done an amazing effort on all our promotions, social media, getting the message out there, and Bruce has been a regular giving input at our weekly teleconferences, and all the other executive members who have shared today, and also Leanne and her team from the National Rural Health Alliance who have done all the administration, which is the only part of our operation is actually professional. the most important part, really. And also Frank, who's down the end there, who's done a wonderful job with the AV. Thank you very much.